Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Card Chronicle podcast. It is the morning of Friday, September 23rd. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Sinard in Columbus, Ohio. And here's the deal. We did a podcast yesterday. We recorded it. I mean, it was like an hour and a half. We had to stop and start it a couple of times. And you know that this it was bad because of our standards when it comes to audio. The audio quality was so bad, it was unlistenable. I could not have put this out into the public. I could not have made you listen to it. For some reason, when we were recording, like Dan's voice, I think it was just a lagging issue, a connection issue, something like that. But Dan would be talking, and like all of a sudden, he would get real slow, and then it would just like speed up, and I couldn't make out any of what he was saying. I was trying to react to it on the fly. It was terrible, terrible podcast, but I was hoping, because you know, a couple of times we've had lagging issues when we've been recording, and it's just been like on my end. I've just heard it when we've been recording, but then when you actually listen to the MP3 file, it's all fine. And then I listened to it, and it was just as bad like on the audio file as it was when we were actually recording. So I thought briefly about just putting it out there anyway and just saying it would have been a gigantic fuck you to everybody listening, because it was so bad that it wouldn't have even been funny. So we're trying this again. Yesterday was the straw that broke the camel's back when it comes to using Skype. I know I should have moved on from Skype a long time ago, but I don't like learning new skills, and I mastered Skype like 20 years ago, so I figured we'd just keep doing that. But yesterday was that was it. We're gonna move on. We're using a new app today. Hopefully this is going to work. Hopefully it's going to sound good. And the good thing about doing the podcast again today is because I made out so little of what you said yesterday, I don't feel like we're having to like recreate the entire podcast. I feel like I missed out on pretty much everything that you said yesterday, so I'm gonna be reacting to it for the first time. But Dan, how are you today?
Yeah, it's nice to be in the new app here. What is this called? Riverdale? River something?
Riverside. We're rocking Riverside.
Yeah, well, it's good to be in Riverside. But, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this. But, no, seriously, like, yesterday was like, you ever, like, have one of, I mean, like, we've done 100 of these pods, and, like, for whatever reason, like, I mean, it was so choppy yesterday, but, like, I didn't even feel on my A game yesterday. Like, even I was like, God, like, I would like a redo at that one. So it's nice that we get to redo it over. I get to kind of fine-tune my jokes. It was weird, like, cracking jokes to you, and there was, like, a 20-second delay before you talked. And I was like, all right, well, this isn't right. But, yeah, I'm excited to be in the new app. Not as excited about the football team.
Yeah, I mean, I let off yesterday's recording talking about how it had been 6 days since the loss to Florida State, so there wasn't a whole lot to say that hadn't already been said. I mean, I've been ranting and raving on the radio show all week. People have been ranting and raving on their respective outlets all week, so there's only so much you can, I guess, do at this point. Now it's been a full week since the game. If you're listening to this, it's probably Friday or Saturday, so you know, the game is kind of old news at this point. But we do want to talk briefly about Florida State and what it meant for the current state of the U of L football program, certainly this team specifically. And then we haven't done this in a while. We asked for questions. You guys delivered me a ton of questions on Twitter, so we'll answer some of those, and then we'll end the show by doing our predictions for now tomorrow's game against USF. I'm going to say that like five times. USF, not UCF. By the way, three straight times we've played Florida schools. It's the first time it's ever happened. We've played three straight games against teams from a state other than Kentucky. Kind of a wild fact.
Let me ask you this. If Charlie was still coaching USF and he comes back, does he get like just an absolute rousing ovation, or do you think they're it's kind of half and half because of the way he left?
I think because of how bad the team is right now, he'd get a rousing reaction. It's kind of like the Patino effect at that at the Notre Dame basketball game. Like,
yeah.
If Chris Mack had been killing it and the team was great, I think there would have been a little bit more of a mixed reaction. But because people are so desperate to get back to winning, you put Patino on the big screen for the Russ Smith game when we're losing to Notre Dame at halftime, and it's like the biggest ovation of the entire season at the Yum Center. I think people would go nuts for Charlie coming back right now just because they're kind of desperate to be reminded of the good times when we were a good football program. Let's talk again briefly. We'll talk about the FSU game from last week. And I actually didn't mention this when we were recording yesterday. It wasn't how I led in, but I don't know if you've picked up on the same thing, Dan. And it's obviously it's faded a little bit as the week has gone on and people's emotions have died down. But I feel like for a lot of people, this was kind of a breaking point. Like this was, and on the surface, it seems weird to say that Louisville was a 3.5-point underdog in this game and they lost by 4 points. So, you know, to the national college football public, this was just kind of a like, you know, why would that loss really bother you guys so much? But it's such a, I think, combination of factors. It's the buildup of a million losses like this. It's the way that this one played out with, you know, Jordan Travis coming out, lighting us up for a half, then getting hurt, his backup Gary Rotemeier coming in and looking terrible at first, throwing the worst interception I've ever seen in my life, and then you know, somehow lighting us up in the second half. And just the fact that it was a game that we feel like we've seen 500 times play out, where it starts off with, you know, we're winning, but we should be winning by more. These self-inflicted wounds are keeping Florida State in the game, and then we're letting them hang around, Oh my God, we're losing, and then we can't make a play to win the game. Like, that's we've done this, it feels like, 75 times over the last 3 years. And I've heard more people, I don't know, in that 48 hours between when the game ended Friday night and when, like, the weekend came to a close, I had more people say, like, I'm done. Like, this was it. I've tried to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I've tried to stay in. If I try to take up for Scott Satterfield, if he wins the next three or four, slap me across the face. Like, just don't let me buy in again. I'm out. It just seems like people aren't sad. People aren't even apathetic right now, which maybe is going to set in starting this weekend. But people were, after this game, just vehemently upset, just pissed about this loss. I don't know if you picked up on the same thing.
No, I definitely have. And I mean, just to piggyback off what you said, I think it's the fashion in which they lost. It's just been a blueprint for the last 3 years of how things have gone. It just seems like people had held out hope that something was going to change. And I made this reference when we talked yesterday, but it really, like, it reminds me of, like, you're dating some chick in high school and, like, you know, whatever. You guys are immature, but you're like, hey, you know what? She goes out and drinks on the weekend. Maybe gets a little too drunk. Like, why is she crying all the time? Like, don't worry. Like, you know, she'll grow up and, or he'll grow up and, like, you know, they'll kind of improve their behavior once they get to college. And then, like, you get to college and it's like the same old shit. And you're like, God damn, like, they're just, it's just not going to change no matter what. And we're seeing the same things, whether it's missed tackles, whether it's being undisciplined as far as penalties, whether it's not finishing games, even though that was, like, quote unquote, the theme of the off season. And that's frustrating. And I mean, I see the tweets about fans kind of checking out for whatever reason. I don't think the noise is as loud as it probably would be just because we have the recruiting class kind of hanging in the balance there. But as far as, like, an, you know, on-field performance from Scott Satterfield, Brian Brown, and this coaching staff, I mean, that's just a game as a coaching staff. You have to figure out how to win. Yes, did the players, you know, not make plays in certain points? Of course, but you have to be able to put your team in a position to win, especially against a backup quarterback when the game is there for the taking. I don't know, man. There's really not a whole lot to say. If you can't win that one, it really does look a little bit more grim for the outlook of the season. I know he has got four must-win games, you know, South Florida, Virginia, James Madison, and there's probably one more in there I'm forgetting. But
BC, probably.
BC, yeah.
Boston College at this point, yeah.
And but, like, I mean, you lose one of those games, I mean, you're staring 5-7, possibly 4-8, you know, in the face. And I think that's going to – if the fans haven't already checked out, I think that might, you know, spell his fate if that's kind of how we finish the year.
I mean, we are hurtling out of control. We're like a comet rocketing through space just towards supreme awkwardness. Like, everybody knows where we're going. Like, this,
right?
We're not going to be so bad that it's cut and dry that we got to fire this guy. It's not going to be like 2018 bad. At least I don't think it's going to be where, like, you got to get rid of him before the season ends, or you know that we're just playing the season out with a lame duck coach. It just, I mean, we talked about this shit all summer, and we are now through three games on the perfect track towards making it weird. Like if this team were 2-1 right now, I think fans would feel pretty optimistic about the rest of the schedule. You'd feel good about the UCF win. You certainly would feel good about the FSU win. And, you know, we'd be saying, okay, let's go 7-5. Let's go 8-4. Let's keep this class going. Let's Scott prove that he's the guy. If you were 3-0, it'd be unbridled enthusiasm. If you were 0-3, it'd be unanimous. We got to fire him now. 1-2, people are pissed, but people are also still leaving that door open to, like, maybe he can do it. And also the way in which it's happened. Just, you know, the Syracuse loss is so weird. Then you turn right around and you get a road win over a team that never loses at home. And then you have that game against Florida State that we've seen a million times where you're watching them play and you're like, we're the better team. We're the better team. They're doing good stuff. They're doing stupid shit. Now they're doing stupid shit. And now we lost. Like, it's just, I don't know where you go from here. And now we can talk about this in a minute. You've got, like, rumors about DeAndre Moore taking a visit to Texas. You've got a report this morning from one of the Texas writers on three that he's changed his crystal ball prediction. And it's just like, God damn it, Scott. Like, we talked about this. This is exactly what we wanted to avoid all summer long. And here we are. And it feels like we're just like this is destined to be weird, destined to be awkward. And it sucks for everybody involved. I just, winning would have made everything so much simpler. And the manner in which it happened, the pre-snap penalties, Louisville now through 3 weeks is, I think, 130th out of 134 teams in penalties, which is just absurd. The missed tackling, I mean, Kendrick Duncan had a game to forget. Like, he looked, the film was just very, very bad. We had a lot of times, and Keith Wynn pointed this out, you know, chopping some plays up and putting them on Twitter. We had a lot of plays where we had dudes in position and they just, like, whiffed or just didn't keep contained. And then there was a lot of, I think, a lack of hustling. It was just the same old shit. And then, you know, Malik Cunningham, he plays easily his best game of the season so far. Threw the ball better than he had the first 2 weeks. Was really dynamic for the first three quarters. And then at the end of the game, when you need him to step up and be a hero, you need him to produce that game-winning drive, he doesn't. He has a couple of opportunities, can't put the ball in the end zone, throws a late-game pick on a play where even if he completes the pass to Braden Smith, Braden Smith's out of bounds, so it's a penalty. You know, just throw the ball away, man. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, Malik has said himself going into the season, the stats are great. I love, you know, all the numbers, but I just want to win. Like, that's what it comes down to when you're the quarterback. You're the guy who gets the most credit for the win. You're the guy who gets the most blame for the loss. You know that going in. And his team is 1-2. And it just feels like we are who we've been the last right. 3 years. And that's a big shame. Let me read you the quote, because Scott Satterfield and company, the press conference after the game is mostly the same of what we heard for the last 3 years, where he's like, yeah, you know, we disappointed, got to tackle better, guys got to make plays. And then he gets asked about the penalties and he's like, we make them run in practice. I don't know what else you want me to do. And I told the story you know, the last time we recorded about it. It reminded me of, we had a briefly when I was growing up, a neighbor across the street, they moved out after like a year, but had this dog that they would keep outside. It was an outside dog. Outside dog people, what are you doing? Let the dog inside. Come on. But they had an outside dog, and it would just bark all night long, like just the loudest barking you've ever heard in your life, 3, 4 a.m. Nobody could sleep. And we would all would go over to the neighbors and be like, you know, you guys got to do something here. And their response was, well, we told him to be quiet. And like, that's not right. Good enough. Like, you know, Satterfield's like, we're telling him it's wrong. You got to do something to clean this up. It's ridiculous. But the quote that really got people worked up, and I'll let you react to this, is Brian Brown on Tuesday during his media availability talking about watching the film of the game from Friday night and saying they saw it on film and they were excited that it wasn't as bad as they thought it would be schematically and whatnot. It was just that guys were there and we just didn't finish and make the tackle. Which, how bad do they think it was going to be if they watched the film and they're like, I'm excited. This actually was, I was expecting worse. I thought we were going to have our pants down. I thought we were going to be staring up into the crowd. I thought we were going to be like lying on the ground crying. The fact that we just didn't make plays, I'm excited about that.
Here, I mean, it's obvious by now here in year four. And I mean, it's no secret to us that like, the term you would put on like Satterfield and Brian Brown would be a player's coach. Okay. And I get that. And like, you know, I'm not saying like player's coaches aren't successful. Like there's some programs that works. Okay. But when you are making not only mental mistakes and physical mistakes, but like, I mean, the play where Monty Montgomery and Kendrick Duncan are obviously jogging after the ball carrier in the most crucial part of the game. At some point, you have to lay these kids out. Like that's just my opinion. And I don't think, you know, I don't think you're being too hard on them by calling someone out for not hustling. Like I think at some point, you know, instead of patting these kids on the back, you got to get in their ass a little bit. And I think that's what the fans want to see. They want to see some sort of emotion and know that, hey, this won't be acceptable around here. And I think that's why a lot of the fans are checking out, because they're like, Jesus. Well, I mean, like obviously the coach is like, I guess, yeah, I know, whatever. They're running laps, but it's more than running. I mean, you have to have these kids held accountable for their mental mistakes, for their physical mistakes. And it just doesn't seem like we have a coaching staff that instills that type of, I don't want to say fear, because it shouldn't be fear, but you know, they don't install that type of will to where the players are just a disciplined football team. And I don't know, man, like maybe this is a different time. Like, do you think we're being too irrational? Like, I mean, it's year four. Like, are we asking, like, you know, are we expecting too much here? Like, because they could be 2-2 after this week. But, like, you know, it seems like half the fan base is checked out. And it seems like half the fan base, if not more, is, you know, already talking about coaching changes. Is that just a sign of the times where in year four, like, that's kind of the, you know, timeline here? Or are we being too harsh on this guy? Because I don't know. Like, it's tough. Like, I feel like when I say it out loud, I'm being too harsh when I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm just seeing the same shit over and over. And I guess that's what the most frustrating part is.
And he's got a losing record after 4 years right now, or in the middle of 4 years. Like, that's his best season was his first season. It was a 7-5 regular season with, I mean, you can say like with Petrino's players, like Petrino's players were the ones who were the biggest difference makers on those first Satterfield teams. Like, I don't think it's being too hard, because I mean, look at the history of Louisville football. We've had some very bad times historically. We've had some very average times historically. There's never been a point where after 4 years with a guy with a losing overall record, the fan base has been like, this is okay. We're good with this. And I know that there are reasons to justify certainly what happened in 2020. Like, the COVID year was a weird thing for everybody. But now we're seeing the same stuff that we saw that season. We're seeing the same stuff that we saw last season. And if it doesn't get turned around to a point where you feel like these guys know what they're doing, then what's the point? I mean, if 8-4 is the best that we can hope for, even with this recruiting class coming in, hopefully, then, you know, what's this all for? Like we want to, this is a program. We know that it can be done here. I know that we did it in different conferences, but those teams with Charlie, those teams in the first Petrino era, some of those teams in the second Petrino era, we know they could play with anybody because they did play with anybody. And the fact that it could be done here before and it's not being done here now, I think speaks volumes. And like we should have – we're not Clemson fans. We're not going to have the highest expectations. We don't expect to be in the playoff every single year, but we should have realistic expectations of being top 25 good just about every year. And flirting with the playoff when it expands every now and then. I don't think that that's unreasonable at all. And right now, we're not even close to that world. And I think that's where the frustration lies. And I think it's understandable frustration.
And just to piggyback off that, those four games I mentioned that like are must win for Scott, I mean, those are not just like gimmies with what I've seen on the field. Like, we could easily lose two, possibly even three of those games. I mean,
sure.
I said this to you yesterday. The offense is like when we watched the basketball scrimmage, like when the against Kentucky State, the first game of the year, and they were like whipping their ass. I remember texting the group, and everyone's like, "Gosh, you know, we look great. We're up like 50, blah blah." And I was like, "Well, I was like, I'm not saying it's bad. I was like, but for whatever reason, like we're doing this, but we do not look like a very like athletic, explosive team." And that's kind of what I see, especially on the offensive side of the ball, at least right now. Now, Tyon Evans obviously was out. I think he might change that or uptick the explosiveness a little bit. But, I mean, without Tyler Harrell, I mean, there's really no one to go over the top. We lose D. Wiggins. It seems like the second half we just resort to hey, Malik, here's the ball. Like, please just get us out of this mess because, you know, we can't do anything explosive here to where we're going to change the game or flip the field. God, if we run another third down crossing route, especially short of the sticks, I was going to have a heart attack. But, I don't know. It's just when I watched the team, I was like, maybe I was overestimating kind of what our offensive prowess would be because – to me right now, like unless the running game truly like explodes, it's just kind of a very mediocre offense.
Yeah. Let's real quickly, we can full on address the elephant in the room, which is this recruiting class, which has been so talked about. You've got DeAndre Moore on, I believe, Wednesday this week. It comes out that he's planning a visit to Texas. He very briefly takes Louisville commit out of his Twitter bio. He puts it back in, but people got the screenshots during that very brief moment in time. First of all, did you know, like, this is me as a bad quote-unquote U of L media person, I guess. Did you know DeAndre Moore's brother's on the team right now?
What? Oh, I did not know that.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I would hope that's a good thing.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to cars.com. It's magical.
So his brother, Ty Moore, who's a redshirt sophomore walk-on wide receiver, he tweets out like the report about the Moore taking a visit to Texas and just says fake news. And I saw it originally and I'm like, cool, like a player on the team right now is saying that DeAndre Moore is not taking a visit. Maybe he knows. And people are like, oh yeah, that's DeAndre Moore's brother. It's his first year on the team. He walked on a couple of seasons at New Mexico, played at a JUCO last year, but I had no idea. That's on me. I probably should have known that. But we had a report today from an On3 writer who does cover Texas. He's a Texas fan writer, I guess, who flipped his prediction for Moore from Louisville to Texas. And it's just kind of like, this is what we were hoping to avoid. Like, this is what we were nervous about. Like I'm not saying that everything's going to just fall apart, but it feels like the first kind of cracks. People have noticed that Pierce Clarkson and his dad have been tweeting a little bit less about U of L in recent weeks. And I can't sit here and say that I'm not nervous about it because every Friday I see a Ruben Owens highlight video and he looks so fucking good. And I just am desperate to see him play for U of L. And if it gets taken away from me at this point, it's going to absolutely break my heart. DeAndre Moore, I think, is just about as good and explosive and exciting. These are the types of guys that we never get. You never get them to Louisville, and now we're being tempted with this. We're being teased with this, and I just feel like if we'd been winning, if we're 3-0, it'd be no problem. But now, I fear that even if we keep Scott Satterfield, even if we go 6-6, we're going to lose some of these guys. And it, I don't know if it's irrational, but I'm panicking a little bit, Dan.
I mean, I see people saying like, hey, if you know, if you want to recruit with like the big time players, like this is what happens. They take other visits, and believe me, like I get that statement, but this is different. Like this is the first year that we've had like a top 20 recruiting class, and it's like basically like out of the blue. So of course, yeah, like people like I don't think are 100% bought into the fact that this is actually going to happen. So of course, when we start out bad, people are going to panic. And you know, if somebody takes another visit, and I'm kind of with you here, I feel like it's not a great sign. If hopefully I'm overreacting and it's nothing, but just the way things are trending right now, I feel like we're not overreacting to this. And I don't know, like it'll be interesting, man. I mean, so much of the season has to play out still. Like I totally get that. But it's going to be weird to see, you know, if for whatever reason Scott isn't retained, kind of how we're going to try to keep this recruiting class together. Are we going to keep, you know, Lance Taylor on staff, since it seems like he did most of the work out west? Is Josh Hurd going to be heavily involved in trying to keep this class together? Is our new coach, you know, are we going to make a splash with whoever our new coach is? Are they going to be able to recruit, you know, keep this class together? So still a lot to play out. I totally get that, but I'm with you. I mean, obviously anytime I see one of the recruits making a visit, especially with a school like Texas, it's not like they're visiting like Iowa State or something. Yeah. You're going to get nervous.
It's so bad. I looked up, cause Ruben Owens has this 502 tattoo. I looked up the potential area codes that you could change 502 to, like 582 is, I believe, Upper Massachusetts. I think we're probably okay there. 508 is the whole state of Vermont, which only has one area code apparently. I don't think the Catamounts are taking Ruben Owens. The other ones, like he's going to have to just get rid of the tattoo completely if he's going to go to a power school in Texas, because you can't flip that 502 into something. I feel confident about that, but I'm freaking out a little bit.
Give me two. I want two of the three. I mean, I want almost all the kids, obviously, like the O-line and that, you know, Madden, how do you pronounce his last name, Sanker? Like, I definitely want him. But yeah. I need two of the three of Clarkson, Owens, and Moore. Like, give me two of those three. If one of them has to move on, like, I can live with that. But, like, God, I need two of those three right there.
All right, do you have any parting thoughts about FSU, or do you want to start taking some questions from Twitter?
We should have fucking won. Anyways, let's go to Twitter.
All right, Twitter questions we asked, you guys delivered. We have a bunch. We won't get to all of these, but we'll get to as many as we can. Wes Jackson says, what coaches would you want, not including Jeff Brohm? Half of these responses were about Jeff Brohm in some way, shape, or form. Have you even thought about guys that you would want to target? I know that everybody's mind is kind of flying all over the place at this point, but outside of Jeff Brohm, is there anybody on the Dan list right now?
Saban. I really don't know. I guess I'm not as well versed as for college football coaching candidates as maybe I would be basketball. Because like, look at the guy at Kansas. What's his name? Lance Leopold. Like,
yeah,
he came from like didn't he come from like some very small college, and like he's having a very successful. I mean, I know it's just three games, but sometimes that's kind of where you find these hidden gems, is like small colleges and stuff like that. Now, granted, I don't know if I want to go that route after fucking having Cragthorpe and Satterfield. Like, I really don't know if I want to go like the small college, make the big jump to the ACC route. But I mean, I see, you know, kind of the same names thrown out there as most people do. I've seen Brohm, you know, Dion, which I don't think that's super realistic, but I'll probably have to dive into it a little bit deeper, you know, Clint Hurt, Dave Ragone, stuff like that. I don't know. Like, we're obviously going to have to trust Josh Hurt on this one if it does get to that point. But I don't feel comfortable naming, like, a candidate probably besides Brohm that would be realistic here.
It's weird how quick things flip, because I can tell you, I don't think I'm, maybe it is breaking news a little bit, but I can tell you with a high degree of certainty that both Jeff Brohm and Dave Ragone would like to be the next Louisville head football coach. And the issue has become like their on-field results. You know, 3 years ago, I think both those guys, people would have been going nuts over some, and some fans still will be going nuts over, but because Ragone's offense in Atlanta hasn't exactly been lighting scoreboards up, which is not, it probably not entirely his fault. I think he's got limited pieces to work with. It might be a tougher sell because Jeff Brohm maybe isn't winning at a high enough level at Purdue, and some of their losses, a couple of their losses this year have come with some weird late game stuff. There are some fans that are kind of pushing back against him a little bit, but outside of that, if we're going to go just based on like our personal history, give me an assistant that I don't know a whole lot about, because like when we hired Charlie Strong, like let's be real, like we all kind of like looked into his background and we're like, oh, okay, like that seems okay. When we were like going to hire Bobby Petrino the first time, we kind of looked into his back. Like we didn't know who Bobby Petrino really was or who Charlie Strong really was a year before that they were hired. And they wound up being great. Scott Satterfield coming from App State, Steve Craigthorpe coming from Tulsa, that kind of group of five to power five transition has not worked out that well for us. So if I'm leaning one way, I'm kind of leaning towards like power program coordinator at this point.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, look what Brett Venables is already doing down in Oklahoma. It seems like he's already got them on track. I mean, that's a big one, obviously. I mean, he was like one of the bigger fish to catch, but I'm with you. Like sometimes some coordinator at a hopefully big time school that's having success that is kind of on the precipice of becoming a head coach.
We also need to, I mean, we're getting the unrealistic candidates being like, people are like Luke Fickell. I'm like, yeah, I'd love Luke Fickell. Yeah,
I don't think that's happening.
Luke Fickell's next leap is going to be the leap home. Like he's going somewhere big whenever he moves.
That'll be Ryan Day to the NFL, Luke Fickell to Ohio State. Like I'm almost willing to put money on that.
That feels like where we're trending. JD says, how insufferable is John Ramsey? No, John's not insufferable. He's fine. I love John. Missed doing radio with him. Absolutely. He got a shout out from Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam during Louder Than Life last weekend.
Can't find a better man. Find a better man. My man, John. All right. I love it.
What was that?
That was my man Eddie.
Just reminds me of the old John Boyes used to do a tweet, Wagner's Finest, where he was like, he calls the Reds, he sucks out loud, can't find a Brenna man.
You know what, man? I don't listen to it anymore, but like early 2010s, I used to listen to Jim Rome, and there was like a skit that had, I don't know. I'd have to go back and dig into it, but they would play that clip all the time of like one of their coworkers like doing karaoke and singing that, and I would laugh my ass off every time. That's where I got it from.
Kevin Skaggs says, "What is your Mount Rushmore of chips? Potato or tortilla? Cheetos, Doritos, pretzels? Any chip you can think of?" And Dan, I think we've covered this on the pod before, but you have like a legit phobia of Doritos.
I do. Like, I guess when I was young, I overdid it. Like, when I was, like, 4 or 5 on Doritos and just barfed my fucking brains out. So, like, anytime someone opens a bag, I'm like, I'm like an even keel guy. I don't get upset. But if you open a bag of Doritos near me and then I'm like, please step away, and you don't, I, like, legitimately get pissed. I'm like, don't fuck with me, man. Like, Matt Damon, good one. I'm like, don't fuck with me, Sean. But no, like,
not you,
even,
man.
Even as a fraternity guy, like, they, people found out I hated Doritos, and that was like part of my hazing, is people would like try to dump Doritos on me. And believe me, I have not forgot who those people were. Like, they will live in my brain forever. But yeah, Doritos are disgusting.
I haven't had Doritos in probably like 15 years. I used to like Cool Ranch Doritos. My favorite, I'm not a big chip guy. I don't think you are really either, but I like salt and vinegar chips with sandwiches. Like those are good. I like pretzels with dips. Like that's, you know, pretzels and hummus, pretzels and little ranch dip. Pretzels would be on my Mount Rushmore. I know we both like those dot pretzels. Those are very good.
Dot pretzels are on the Mount Rushmore. Like I travel a lot, so I make a lot of convenience store stops, and like I don't think I've gone in there without getting one of those big bags of combos, which says a lot about where I am right now.
Do you remember? I don't even know if you remember this. In high school, I ate a chip sandwich every single day.
I was
going to
bring it up. That was like your trademark. You'd literally like sit like. You were like probably the biggest packer of the.
Oh yeah,
like you love to pack your lunch and, yeah, just you'd always lay those chips right in the sandwich. Something a little satisfying about it, but, yeah,
It was turkey and Colby on like a bun, and then I would just like regular like standard potato chips. Just
you know what? I chip sandwich every day. I do that at home sometimes when I'm feeling a little frisky, but, yeah, I don't know. Like you said, I'm a huge, huge chips and salsa guy. Like, I will try any salsa. I will go to the end of the earth to try different salsa. I'm a big spice guy. I like spicy. So, any salsa recommendations out there that you love, send them my way.
Swag Monster says, why doesn't my wife love me, Mike? I don't know. More unexpected gifts at unexpected times. It's the key. Finding Forrester.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with the name Swag Monster.
turn the swag up a little bit.
Yeah, might want to turn the swag up just a tad.
Turn the monster down. Evan says, can we start the Hire Harry Douglas campaign? I'd love to see Harry Douglas as a coach. I think he'd do a great job. He's doing great on ESPN, though, right now.
Yeah. I mean, we love Harry. This is a pro Harry Douglas podcast. Yeah, any way for him to get involved in the program, I'm all for.
The Devster says, was Ken Lola's abrupt departure ever discussed? U of M soccer used to be as exciting as any program. Then we lost the top five coach, which was never replaced. I feel like it'd be if Dan McDonald just bounced and we replaced him with some local guy and we were never contenders again. Well, I mean, we haven't been as good recently as we were with Ken Lola here, but John Michael Hayden, I think, has done a good job. We went to the NCAA tournament last year. We're number 25 in the country right now, so we're nationally ranked. But Ken Lola's departure was weird. Yeah. My understanding was always that it was, one, he's a great motivational speaker, a very religious guy. I think he wanted to do something professionally that combined those things, and that's what he's been doing. He's been doing, I think, speaking tours, and he's been doing some religious stuff. But the other thing that I was told was it was at least some ways tied to Tom Turch leaving. He felt like Tom was kind of his guy. Tom was the guy who gave him what he wanted to make the program as successful as it was. And when he left, I think he was concerned about not receiving that same level of support. So I think that did play a part in his leaving. But men's soccer, I think John Michael Hayden's done a good job. He just got a contract extension. They haven't been kind of in that national title race like they were under Lola in recent years, but they're still, they play Pitt tonight. It's going to be a big game. Number 25 versus number 8. I got faith in our Trinity brethren there.
No, I mean, obviously, I was going to say we're Trinity guys, so nothing bad to say about John Michael Hayden. But that is big shoes to fill. Like, you didn't hear one bad word ever about Ken Lola when he was here. Like, you heard only positive things. And I think you're right. Just from everything I've heard, I think a lot of it had to do. He was very tied to Tom Jurich at the time. And, we were lucky enough for the most part to hang on to some good coaches, even when Tom left, like a Dan McDonald. But sometimes that's just the way it goes. But I got faith that our soccer team will get back there. Like you said, we're kind of, I feel like, trending upwards the last couple of years. So just got to give them a little bit of time here.
I'm just realizing when we started recording today, you didn't play your sad song off your phone. What did you play yesterday?
I got to find it here. Oh, man. Give me a second. I'll play it as like going out music.
Okay. Keys asks, better all-time card. Let's settle the debate right now. Is it Brad Giannini or Chris Curran?
Oh, man. I can't answer this.
Like, do you remember this that we – like when we met Brad Giannini and Chris Curran, we're drinking with them at the top of Molly's after we beat UConn in, I think, 2014. We like straight up asked them about how we debated all the time which one of them was better.
I do remember that. God, we had, yeah, Molly's. There were some wild times up there, but
that night got away from us.
That night did get away from us. But I don't know. Like, I mean, I think Brad was obviously in some bigger moments. Like, obviously, the Memphis Conference USA Championship game comes to mind. I remember Brad in the – God, it was Maui, wasn't it, where Brad, like, went off for, like, 15 points or something? Is that right?
I have zero recollection of that, if it happened.
I swear. Did we play Iowa and Maui one year? Or, like,
we played Iowa – we played Iowa in, like, the Wooden Legacy.
Okay, I'll have to look this up, because I swear there was a game where Brad had, like, 12 or 15. It was, like, one of the first games of the year, and I was like, is this a thing?
You might be right. Like, we played them, I think we may have played them in Maui, too, because we lost to them twice in, like, a three-year span very early in the year. So that may be right. I feel like one of those was in Maui, too, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, I've always kind of looked at him as, like, a similar, you know, player, and obviously they were there for some good times, so nothing but good memories with those guys.
I mean, you're just not gonna pick, are you? Give me right, Giannini.
I don't want to hurt it. I liked both of them, but if I had to base it on basketball merit only, I'm probably gonna go Brad, just because I remember him a little bit more on the court.
He was crafty, he had handles, he started a few games. I was a big Brad guy back in the day. Rawls Quixote says, with the news that Vladimir Putin is mobilizing 300,000 reserve soldiers, is Danny in any way concerned that his radio counterpart Trevor could be drafted into military service? So people on who listen to the radio show think Trevor is a Russian. He's a Russian sympathizer. That's what that's about. We're worried about TK.
I feel like I need to, like, have a camera crew, like, go out with me and Trevor one night and just literally record us. At, like, I don't know what Trevor's hobbies are.
It's just drugs. It's just drugs and video games. That's it.
Maybe we'll leave the camera at home. But anyways, yeah, no, I think I'd like a night out with Trevor. Isn't he big? You said he's big into wrestling.
Very big into wrestling. Right, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I could. Probably not only I can go toe to toe with them, but like my, you know, like 1989 through like 2000 wrestling knowledge, I'd put on par with a lot of people.
Yeah, when I say Trevor's big into wrestling, I mean he's like streaming Japanese wrestling at 3 a.m. Like it's a different level.
Gotcha. So not just Yokozuna. There's other guys.
It's not just like, hey, do you remember Coco Beware? It's that's not his thing.
Gotcha. Like, okay. Yeah. It's like, did we like the model Rick Martel's theme music?
Jacob says, let's just do it. Let's just ask straight up right now. Is Scott Satterfield the head coach a year from now? What do you think? I'll let you go first.
I just said, you know what? Fans are probably not going to like this answer. I think yes. Like, I feel like Josh Hurd just made a basketball hire. And I know Scott's, like, not his guy. Like, he didn't hire him. But I don't know. Like, I think he is still looking for some stability within the football program. But I'm going to say yes, but I'm not very confident in that.
I'm going no. One, I feel like Josh Hurd's not going to hesitate to pull. He's not going to be held hostage by a recruiting club. If he thinks that this is not the guy who can lead Louisville football back to where we want it to be, then he's going to say it's time to cut ties. I am not certain that Scott Satterfield really wants to be here, if I'm just being honest. Like, if he does, he needs to start showing us. Like he needs to. Like, how badly do you want to be the coach who takes U of L football back to national prominence? Because we don't seem to see a whole lot of that. You got the South Carolina thing. You've got the fact that he just kind of comes off as what was me in press conferences. And it just doesn't seem like a fit. It doesn't. It hasn't for a long time. It certainly doesn't right now. There's still time for this to be rectified, sure. But it feels like we are trending in a direction where this is just a failed marriage that needs to be severed at some point in the relatively near future. This is no inside information. I'm not trying to like pass along any inside information and veil it as me giving an opinion. This is just a guess. My guess would be that he's not the head coach next year.
You know what? I literally think you just swayed me. I'm switching my answer.
There it is.
I just like the more I think about it, I'm like, I mean, like, especially, like, I mean, I'm thinking in my head, like, hey, Florida State, like, great crowd, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think once we start seeing some of these future home attendance games, like, it's going to feel kind of Craig Thorpian a little bit.
For sure.
And the writing could be on the wall. So I'm changing my answer.
And we did give a shout out to the crowd. I mean, I know the number wasn't exactly over the top. I think 46,000 in change is what they announced the attendance last Friday. But the fans who were there, I mean, it was very loud. They were very into it. They showed up. They were wearing the red. The red out looked good on TV. It was, you know, it was the type of environment that you expect. And if they'd won, I think the crowds would have continued to be good for the rest of the year. And now they're going to use the word Craig Thorpian. You're probably going to have around 30,000, maybe not even that, Saturday for USF. And we're going to be right back to having that type of crowd that's always on edge. Like, they're waiting. If USF scores first on Saturday, there's going to be boos. Like people are upset. The diehards are going to be out there, but they want to see more from this team. They want to see more from this coaching staff. And if they don't get it, they're going to voice their opinions loud. It's just, it's not a pretty thing. It's not where anybody wants to be, but it's certainly where we are right now. Hank Tubbs says, shocking lack of explosive plays with Satterfield's play calling right now. Do you think that we call Dylan Lawson and make him say no? He knows a thing or two about explosive offense. I'll hang up and listen. So for people listening who have no idea what that's about, like, one of my oldest friends, and I know, Dan, you were friends with him. We went to high school, all went to high school together. Dylan Lawson, who I played baseball with my entire life through high school, is now the hitting coach for the New York Yankees. And it's very fucking weird to see, like, turn on a Yankees game, see Aaron Judge hit his 60th home run, tie Babe Ruth, and then have him, you know, dap up like a guy that I've known my entire life in the Yankees dugout, and then, like, text him 5 minutes after the game and have him talk about it. It's super weird, but it's very cool. And he's doing a hell of a job up there in New York. You wouldn't know it from the fan base, though, but my God.
We have to talk about, like, I don't know why we haven't talked about this yet. The Red series in New York. Like, I mean, I think for people that don't know, like, I have two uncles that work for the Reds right now. They're equipment managers. Like, one of them is the visiting clubhouse manager that usually works the visiting clubhouse, and the other's the home clubhouse. So usually one of my uncles goes on the road trips. So I gave him a heads up. I'm like, hey, when you're in New York, like, go over and say hi to Dylan. Like, I went to high school, I played baseball with him. Like, he's friends with a bunch of, you know, me and my friends. So we get a picture from my uncle that Aaron Boone, like, took on the field of Dylan and my uncle, and we're like, God, what, like, a circle of life this is. And then we're watching the game later that night, and Dylan gets ejected from the dugout. I couldn't believe it. Like, it was absolutely wild. Like, I was like, what is going on?
One of the most surreal moments of my life, I'm watching the game. Like, one of my good friends gets thrown out of the game against my favorite team. I text him 3 minutes after I've just watched this. Like, we have a group text of our former baseball guys. And I'm like, hey, Dill. And he just goes, hey, guys. And he's like, I'm like, so what do you do now? Like, we're like, he's like texting us from the Yankees clubhouse about, like, what he's doing and how much he hated this guy that tossed him out of the game. He's like, he's fucking soft. All this. I was like, well, this is a very surreal moment for me, but it's very cool to see. I mean, I've never liked the Yankees. I certainly still, like, don't like the Yankees, but it's kind of hard not to cheer for them at this point when one of my oldest friends is, like, chasing a World Series ring and also chasing history with Aaron Judge. It's pretty cool to follow.
I will say, I know people are getting bored. Yankees are a lot more likable this year, except, like, Gerrit Cole and Donaldson. Those two suck, but everyone else, I kind of like on the Yankees.
Kevin Skaggs says, have y'all been paying attention to volleyball? Yeah, we bring up volleyball on the radio show so much that UK fans, like, make fun of us on the text line about it. But Louisville volleyball, number 2 in the country. They took down number 9 Stanford last week. They start ACC play tonight, I believe, against Miami. And
yeah, I was cool thing. Say ESPN taking notice. They're giving us two more games.
Yeah, they played Kentucky on ESPN a couple of Wednesdays ago, which was the fourth volleyball match, regular season volleyball match ever that's been on the big network. The ratings were very good. I saw it did like 375K viewers, which if you're looking for a comparison, is kind of the same as the like an MLS regular season match that airs on ESPN. And MLS has like a $250 million contract with ESPN. So that was a very impressive number. And now ESPN has moved two more Louisville volleyball matches. I believe it's their matches coming up against Florida State and Georgia Tech to ESPN. It'll be on Sunday, so it's up against the NFL, but that's still a nice vote of confidence and a nice recognition for our ladies. But they're number two in the country. Fucking Texas, again, is number one. So they're killing it. Only
Texas
one loss
like
so far this
year
to Ohio State.
That we like never play in any sport. I feel like Texas.
They are. I mean,
been fucking us
I hate
lately.
Texas. I'm done with Texas. I hate them. Let's see. Can't read that one. Clay says, we got Saved by the Bell on the beach. We got Saved by the Bell in Hawaii, in college, in Vegas. Why didn't they ever hit Europe? It's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you count Screech's spaghetti sauce episode, there was some, Italian references there. We had the chess episode, like, also there.
The Spassky Bishop block?
Yeah. Gosh, just windy game. He's too good. He's too good. But anyways, I would have loved to see some Zach Morris European outfits for sure.
I feel like USA High just picked up that ball and ran with it. Eiffel Tower Cafe was a terrible show, but they tried to do the Saved by the Bell in Europe thing. Marky Schultz, I read this yesterday and you made fun of me. I'm going to read it again, though, even though it's very complimentary to me. Marky says, Mike, I love the way you cover your teams. It's the best way to do it. I moved here 16 years ago and now, and you're the only dude who seems to get what's going on here, in my opinion. So what's the true goal for the football team? Respect, championship contention, conference contention, because I believe that you guys are a basketball force and that won't ever change. I'm an OSU fan. I know that I expect to be a football force and I'm stoked when we make a run in hoops. Is the flip true at U of L? Do you expect to occasionally make a run at the top in football? First of all, thank you, Marky.
Very complimentary there. Yeah, that was a convenient question to read.
You've got great hair. You're the best dad.
You can do 50 push-ups without stopping.
We kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with it when we were talking about just like the team. You asked that question about, you know, are we being fair to Scott Satterfield? I don't think our expectations for the football program are unreasonable. Like, I don't think that any Louisville football fan is of the mindset that like we should be Ohio State, Auburn, Alabama, you know, LSU, Clemson every single year. Like, we should be in that upper echelon. I think we all know how hard it is to break through and become one of the haves in college football. But I think because of the fact that we've had a Heisman Trophy winner. We've been in the playoff race multiple times over the last couple of decades. We've had two top six finishes. We've had four top 15 finishes over the last two decades. I think we know that it can be done here. And I think most Louisville football fans are fine with being like top 25-ish good most seasons. And then once every, I don't know, 5-6 years, like competing for a conference championship when these divisions go away, and hopefully flirting with like a spot in the playoff when it expands to 12 teams. I think that should be the expectation. I don't think it's unreasonable. I think it's different than basketball for sure, but like that's kind of where I am.
Yeah, and I somewhat agree. Like, I don't think it's bad to have high expectations every once in a while. I do wonder that when we were making a lot of those, you know, runs at Orange Bowls and Sugar Bowls and stuff like that, we were not playing, quote unquote, like in a Power Five conference. Like, not saying the Big East was dog shit by any means. I mean, obviously we had West Virginia, Rutgers. I mean, there were some good teams there, but just I think we may have underestimated the kind of middle of the road teams in the ACC when we joined. Like, I think we had just like chalked up a bunch of wins in our head, like, oh, Virginia win, Wake Forest win, North Carolina, we're better than them, like, you know, as surefire wins. And now that we've gotten in the conference, now granted, since we've been in this conference, I mean, I think there's only really been one year where I think we had a team that was quote unquote contenders in the national spotlight. But yeah, it's been tough sledding so far. So I don't know if I want to, like, I don't think I should dial back my expectations, but I do think it's a bigger uphill climb in the ACC than maybe we gave it credit for when we entered back in 2014 or 15.
Yeah, I think the issue is the conference has changed since we entered. Like when we entered, BC and Wake were terrible. Syracuse was not good, and those teams have gotten better. Yeah. And we haven't. Like we've gotten worse, because the first three seasons we were in the conference, we went undefeated against the non Florida State, Clemson teams in the Atlantic Division. We were 3-0 against NC State, Wake, BC, and Syracuse. Like we dominated those teams. They upped their game, besides Syracuse, until this year, and we've gotten worse. And it's just, you know, it's tougher to dig yourself out of a hole in this conference than it was back in the Big East and certainly Conference USA. And I think we're kind of finding that out right now. Jamar says, how much NIL money will this defense generate for opposing offenses this year? I mean, did we get Johnny Wilson paid? Like that tall guy that Scott Satterfield would call him? Like,
yeah, that was a tough scene there for Scott. I don't know. It's pretty – I mean, I can't believe – like, do you think there's any chance Brown gets let go mid-season? I know we're just coming off a game in UCF where they maybe had one of their better defensive performances of the year, and I've seen the stat where – you know, it seems like the defense has strung together like a decent amount of stops in a row, like in consecutive games. But it does seem like, I mean, he did say this is his most talented defensive team, yet we're seeing some of the same issues that we've seen the first 4 years. And I'm just surprised that Scott has just tied himself to this guy. And he's just going down with the ship, I feel like, a little bit. But yeah, maybe I'm being a little too hard on him. I don't think I am, but haven't seen the improvement that I was hoping to see.
Yeah, at this point, I think going down with the ship, that's the right term. I don't think, and I also don't think if he's going to try to do this sacrificial coordinator thing, I don't think it should play with the fan base, because Scott made this decision to keep Brian Brown around. Like, this is, you're not the offensive coordinator, you're the head coach. You are in charge of bringing in players, you're in charge of scheme, you're in charge of who your defensive coaches are. And if you looked at the data from 3 years that said Brian Brown is not good and this defense has been just downright bad, and you still chose to keep him for year four, you don't get credit for firing him after or during year four. Like, that falls on you. Like, this is your program. And I don't think people should be like, well, now that Brian Brown's gone, Satterfield can finally start coaching his game. And like that should not be a thing. If he wanted to try to get that little, you know, support boost move, he should have done that after a year or two. And it's just, at the end of the day, like, this is his program. Whatever happens falls on him. It's been 4 years. You don't get that coordinator, like, safety net at this point. Josh says, would you rather beat UK in football or basketball this year?
Go ahead. You go first.
It's weird because, like, we don't know what type of season this football team is going to have. We don't know what the situation is going to be with Satterfield. Like, just on its head, just like everything being equal, give me football right now, because we've been just dominated by these guys so badly the last three times we've played. It's never been like this bad for us on this side of the rivalry. I'd love to get things back going to like where we've got the Governor's Cup. I know basketball, it would be great to beat John Calipari and Kenny Payne's first season, but we've got time to get the roster better. We got time to improve. Right now, in this very brief moment in time, I'm taking the football win.
Yeah, I'm going to go basketball, only because I think being the first year, like, it makes, like, such a statement if your coach is to go out and beat your biggest rival. Like, I think when, like, you know, John Calipari came in first year, and obviously, I mean, they had John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, and, I mean, they came in, they beat us. I know it wasn't one of UofL's better teams that year, but it was kind of a, hey, I'm here now, and like, things are going to be a little bit different type deal. And it would be amazing if Kenny Payne could do that. With football, obviously, I'm not saying I don't want to win this game, but, you know, with a win against UK, you could be, you know, maybe by the fans, you know, dismay, prolonging the Scott Satterfield era, you know, even a little bit longer. So, for me, you know, I'm not saying I want to lose, but it might speed up the process a little bit. If most of the fan base is on board with getting a new coach.
Yeah, I can see that too. I mean, it's a tough question to answer here on September 23rd.
We'll
probably be able to give a better answer here come November. Colby says, is KP hedging hard, or is he pulling the old Scotty from Star Trek trick of saying it'll take 8 hours to repair the warp core, so he'll look like a miracle worker when he gets the ship operational in 3? I don't know if this is about DJ Wagner specifically, or if it's just about recruiting, because we have several questions about, you know, Kenny Payne. You know, we were promised all these recruits. Are you guys getting worried? I think DJ Wagner's going to Kentucky. I do. Is there time for Kenny Payne to, like, you know, pull off a Hail Mary and change this at the last second? Maybe. I'm not going to say it's like 100% certain, but UK people, including John Calipari, think it's 100% certain, which they're rarely wrong about something like that. So, I'm not totally off, but I do kind of feel like that ship has sailed a little bit. I think Louisville fans, a lot of them have, and the staff have turned their attention to AJ Johnson, who, 5-star point guard, I think very excited. He's got a huge social media following, which is no small deal in this day and age. He took a visit to Texas a couple weeks ago. Once again, our fucking rivals from Austin. He visited LSU last week, and he's visiting NC State this weekend, but he is still planning on coming to Louisville Live next month, October 21st. So if you get him to Louisville Live, I think you have a live shot to get him. And he could be that focal point, that centerpiece of Kenny Payne's first class that really just brings everything together, because I think Caleb Glenn and Curtis Williams are very good players. I think some of the other guys that we're in on, these other 4-stars, could be very good college players, but they're not the type of guy that we were expecting to land when we hired Kenny Payne. AJ Johnson is, DJ Wagner certainly is, and I think you need one of those guys to kind of just calm the fan base down a little bit, let them know that it's going to be okay, let them know that this is what we're going to be able to do moving forward, and solidify this class as like top 10 good.
Yeah, I don't want the listeners to take this the wrong way. Like, obviously, I'm not saying I don't want DJ Wagner. Of course I do. Like, he's a, you know, probably would be one of the best, or if not the best recruit that we've gotten here. Obviously, we have, like, the legacy thing as well, and I think that would be a big deal, you know, from that standpoint to land him here at U of L. But it does almost seem like if – like a lot of the fan base is putting all their eggs in this DJ Wagner basket. And it does scare me a little bit. Like, if he were to get on campus, kind of the expectations that would be put on this kid to perform. I'm not saying by any means, it's not by his doing. Like, I'm not saying that he would be like a sideshow by any, you know, by any fact, but I don't know. Sometimes it's, to me, like I always go back to the 2000, you know, the early 2010s, the Gorgie, Peyton Siva class, or excuse me, the Gorgie, who else? Like, there was a couple other guys that maybe like went a like little
Russ.
Bit. Yeah, Russ, like, obviously. And I'm not saying it's going to be like that. Like, we don't need to get like, you know, 2-3-star guys. But, you know, hey, sometimes it works out if you don't land like the big, big fish. And obviously, I mean, AJ Johnson as a backup option would be tremendous. Like, he looks like he'd be unbelievable. So obviously I want DJ Wagner. But if we, you know, if we didn't get him and we landed somebody else solid, it might not be the worst thing in the world.
I mean, there were people, you know, Wagner went to Spain playing with that USA, I think, under 19 World Cup team. And there were people who were saying like, he was just flat out bad. He just did not look good. I think DJ Wagner is going to be a fantastic college player, but I also don't think that he's like the fan base, I think, has built him up a little bit that he's this one and done, like Zion type talent. And I'm not sure that he's that. What I'm saying is, if you get AJ Johnson and you don't get DJ Wagner, we can all do the fan thing and talk ourselves into Johnson being the better player and maybe the better fit. And it's not going to be like totally outrageous. You know, what are you doing? Like, we can do that. But if you don't get him, I think then you put yourself in a position where this team, this upcoming season, needs to overachieve a little bit for the fan base to feel confident in KP moving forward. You got to have one of those two things. You got to be killing it in recruiting, or you got to be overachieving on the court. If you're not doing either, then I think people are going to get a little bit worried. Of course, and a lot of it depends on what the IRP is going to do whenever they make their decision in 2065.
I mean, this is, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, we thought, this is getting ridiculous. Like, I mean, Jesus, make a decision. I mean, I don't know.
It's
like,
been six fucking years. Oh, my God.
I literally, I mean, this is outrageous. This is like a, it's a crime against humanity. This is ridiculous, but whatever.
Let's see. Choppa says, is there a college football stadium you definitely want to visit? I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go to an LSU night game. I would love to go to the Swamp. Auburn, like, I'm naming all these SEC schools. Like, I don't know. I mean, as much as I, you know, like to dog on the SEC, from, like, a football atmosphere standpoint, I mean, their games, a lot of them are second to none.
I know you've been here a bunch of times because your wife's a diehard Michigan fan. I still really want to go to the Big House. It always just seems cool. I've been to Ohio State. I've been to Notre Dame. I've been to Clemson. Those are all awesome. I'm with you. Like, LSU night game seems outrageous. I'd love to go to the other Death Valley and see just how loud it gets for a big time night game there. Those two would probably be at the top of my list, like the Big House and then Tiger Stadium.
So the Big House it's definitely cool from like a visual standpoint. Like, I mean, obviously it's big, Big House. But anyways,
not like, just a clever name.
Yeah, it's big. But like, we tailgate like on a golf course, which is awesome, like right next to the stadium. But like, when you're in the stadium, like, yeah, the visual's cool, but the way the stadium's built, like, it doesn't keep a lot of sound in. And to be honest, it's really not that loud. Like, the seating goes, like, instead of, like, you know, kind of, like, straight up, it, like, kind of jets out to the side, so it doesn't keep a lot of the sound in. So I'm not saying it's a bad atmosphere. I've been to some bad games, like Illinois and, you know, stuff like that. But I've also been to, like, Notre Dame games there where it gets real rowdy. So, yeah, definitely put on your list place to visit. It's really cool, but don't expect it to be, like, the loudest atmosphere in college football.
Michigan fans suck. Dan Sinard said it right here on the podcast. Take it up on the message boards.
Sorry, Kim.
Cardinal Stadium, better atmosphere than the Big House. Dan Sinard, quote. Official quote.
There it is.
Let's see. Corey says, now that Trevor isn't here, blink twice if you need a new radio co-host. No, I love Trevor. Let's see. Elliot Lane says, House of Dragons or Rings of Power? You're asking the wrong podcast this question.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like, I, like, and whatever. If there's Game of Thrones fans out there, I apologize. But, like, I tried to watch it. I got through three seasons. And, like, that's just not. Like, I don't do those kind of shows. I don't do, like, the Lord of the Rings. I don't do House of Dragons or, you know, whatever these shows are called. Like, that's just not my cup of tea. And the fanatics were so into it while it was going on. Like, when the last season happened, I swear to God, I, like, took pleasure in the fact that it was awful. I was like, I told you this was going to suck. It was awful. But, yeah, like, I don't know. It seems like the diehards maybe checked out a little bit, but now they're like full board jumping back in with this new show. And I know one thing, I'm not going to do it.
I mean, I guess I respect the Game of Thrones diehards who have gotten back into House of the Dragon. Like, I was very into Game of Thrones. I felt very betrayed by the last season and a half. It was so bad. The writing just got so lazy. And look, I'm too much of a spiteful person. I don't forgive that easily. Like, I'm going to carry a grudge with me till I die. If you wrong me that badly, like, if you cheat on me, like, I'm getting rid of you. I'll forgive you. I'm never forgetting. I'm going to hate you inside forever. I will hate Game of Thrones inside forever. Benioff and Weiss ruined my life with those last two seasons, and I'm not going to watch House of the Dragon. Now, if 4 years from now they've had four seasons and everybody's like, it's the greatest show in the history of television, I'll watch it then. But I'm not just giving my heart back to the series, like, from the beginning. It's not happening. And then I've never been a Lord of the Rings guy, so I haven't watched the other show. But if you are, more power to you. I've heard people really like it, great things, but it's not for me.
Is it me or, like, shows, like, gone downhill the past, like, 2 years? Like, I feel like it's hard to find, like, a good show nowadays.
I'm watching Only Murders in the Building. I really like it. Selena Gomez.
What is it called?
Only Murders in the Building on Hulu. It's Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. It's good. It's very easy to follow, very quick. I enjoy it.
Is this like a playoff, like Father of the Bride?
No, it's like they're podcast enthusiasts who start their own murder mystery podcast when people start dying in the building they live in New York. It's entertaining. I like it.
All right.
Connor Shea says, worst flavor Dum Dum.
The root beer by far.
I don't mind the root beer. I'm going banana split. I don't like banana candy. No, not for me. That's the worst one. I don't like butterscotch either.
Oh, yeah. All three. I think we named the three worst right there. I don't do any of those.
The Bird Brothers podcast asks, if you had to pick a former Louisville basketball player to babysit your kids, it'd be, and also to keep it fun, you can't pick Gorgui Dieng because that's too obvious.
That's literally, I was like, well, this is easy.
Yeah. Who would you go with?
Oh, man. Gosh. I mean, take your pick. Like, there's so many candidates. I feel like I need to pick someone like out of the blue. I'd probably go Otis George. I feel like Otis would be fun. Big Otis George fan. I'd go Otis.
I'm going with my guy, Ron McMahon. Very trustworthy. Very nice kid. By the way, just got married a couple weekends ago. He's on his honeymoon right now.
That's awesome.
Congrats to Ryan and Rose, both a great young couple. We love Ryan. I thought Jack Harlow kickball thing, I talked to Ryan for a long time, and he was kind of breaking down the wedding and everything that he was. Also, like, having Donovan Mitchell on your bachelor party has its benefits. He's like telling me about like how Donovan was able to hook up a bunch of stuff. I'm like, yeah, that scholarship really worked out for you. That was a beneficial friendship to have, but very cool to see. Like, Donovan was in his wedding. That was awesome. But I would trust Ryan McMahon with my kids. I'll say that.
Speaking of which, are we Cavs fans now? Like, are you going to come visit Columbus? We're going to go to a couple Cavs games, check out Donnie B-Ball up in Cleveland.
I'd love to. Yeah, we need to make that happen.
I think they got a pretty good team. Like, I think they should contend in the East a little bit. So I'm looking forward to it. I follow players in the NBA more than teams. Like, I kind of bounce teams around. So I'm excited to get my Cavs on.
Have you seen I don't think we've even talked about this. Mary and I, like, when the NHL schedules came out, we were like, let's find a game in Columbus. We'll go up when they play the Avalanche. We'll go up there. We'll go to the game. Like, we'll have a night out. We'll stay with Danny and Kim for a weekend. And we looked it up. The Jackets and the Avalanche play twice this year in Finland.
I know. That's such a bummer because, like, my brother likes to come in for those games too.
It sucks.
I know. Like, obviously, Lanch coming off Stanley Cup, and the Jackets had, like, biggest offseason signing with Johnny Hockey. So I'm looking forward. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. Like, I'm so into hockey. It's unbelievable. I don't know what it is. Like, I am, like, salivating for the season to get here. They just started training camp and stuff. So I can't believe I've become this guy. Like, if you would have asked me this 10 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. But I am all in on hockey.
Eric says, how big of a jack-off do you have to be to make a Bring Brom Home parody account online? Yeah, Bring Brom Home guy is back. He is he's spamming every tweet everywhere. I muted him pretty quickly just because I can't see it on every post. I'm sorry. But he's diligent. We'll say that. I've never seen anybody so committed to one thing as that guy is. It's almost impressive.
The Pedro quote, Pedro Martinez back in 2002, is like, sometimes you just have to tip your cap and call them my daddy. Like, that's literally what this guy is. He just – no matter what the post is, like, he's blowing it up. He's going to be there. Like, this guy is everyone's daddy in the Louisville fan base. So, I persistence is, you know, key for this guy, obviously. But I am a little worried about his lifestyle.
I love that because people – there are a lot of people who think that the guy who's behind this is my producer on the radio show, Trevor. Trevor, I love him. Trevor is he's the laziest person I've ever met in my entire life. He does not have, like, the energy to put he wouldn't put that much energy into anything, let alone a Bring Brom Home account. Trevor is a Jeff Brom enthusiast. He does want Jeff to come coach the team, but he's not going to be tweeting. This guy tweets like 45 times in a minute. I've never seen a higher rate of tweets. It's unbelievable. Like, Trevor is not – if he was that guy, I'd be shocked. I don't know who the guy is, but he's back at it. He's out there. He's doing his thing. Ryan Keeling says, how long could you take Satterfield going 6-6 every year if he just won every other game, regardless of the week-to-week opponent? It would include Kentucky and Clemson this year. I can't take 6-6 right now. I've got like a this year left in me, and then I've got to be done. I can't handle the win loss thing anymore. So that's my limit is this year. I'm done.
Yep, I'm the same way. Like obviously some of those wins would be nice, but the record that would do it for me. I can't do 6-6 anymore.
Adam Goff says top 5 play by play people.
Yeah, I'll go Sean McDonough. Like football theme here and baseball, like Joe Buck. Joe Buck like screams big game.
I'm not the biggest fan.
I like him better in baseball, and I'm like kind of disappointed that he's not going to be doing the World Series. I think that kind of sucks, but Al Michaels. Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's probably more I'm forgetting, but those are like 3 off the top of my head.
I'm with you on McDonough for sure. I like Dan Shulman a lot, even though he's kind of gotten a little curmudgeon-y in his old age. I love Jason Benetti. He made the move from ESPN to Fox this year, I think. He's awesome. Used to call out Dan Dockich. I love him for that. Those would probably be my top 3.
Oh, we're missing Sean Moth, Louisville baseball, obviously.
Sean Moth would absolutely, and like that's not even like a joke. Like I love
100%. Sean. Yeah, like I swear on this, like I would love for him to like get a call up to like, you know, the big leagues or something like that. Like I think he's that good where
for
like,
sure
he could do it and wouldn't miss a beat. Like I think it's one of the more underrated aspects of Louisville sports that he gets to call baseball games on the radio. I think he's phenomenal, and that's a hard thing to do.
Oh, it's I can't even imagine. But I obviously I love Sean personally, but I think also like I love listening to him call games. Like I think he's that good. Like I choose to listen to baseball on the radio sometimes, even when U of L's on TV, just because I love listening to Sean. Yeah, he'd be my top 5 too. I
think, we forgot Tom Brenneman.
Okay.
That's obviously a joke, people. A joke.
This podcast is about to get canceled.
Yeah, I know.
Tom's hating on the Reds when they were really bad was always enjoyable back in the day. You kind of miss it.
The comment was egregious and like it deserves like, you know, he doesn't deserve to be on the air. But when he was announcing for the Reds like the years where they were awful and he would just absolutely no holds barred like light up everyone and like on the field, like I mean we would text each other and be like, Jesus, Tom hates his job. Like Pujols like would get a 3-1 fastball down the middle and as soon as the ball hit the bat he's like, and it's 4-1 ball game, and like literally it just stays silent for like a good 2 minutes.
Folks, at some point, you got to ask yourself, is Todd Coffey ever going to get anyone out again?
Got to start wondering, is Kelly Stinnett going to make contact the rest of the season?
I think my favorite all time, I think it was Ryan Howard for the Phillies, where he's like 3-0 from Leak to Howard here. And if you know anything about recent Phillies games against the Reds, you know that you can't give him anything to hit here. And there's a long drive to right field, and it's 4-1. Unbelievable, folks.
Yeah, those were the days.
I do miss that. All right, I apologize to all the questions we haven't gotten to. I didn't realize we've been talking for this long. Before we get to our South Florida game predictions, Dan, what's your Dan in the dumps for this week?
All right, so my little guy Cam just turned 8, and like me and my wife were on the same I want to say we're on the same page about this. Because I ultimately agreed to it, but I didn't want it. Like, we had 2 choices for the birthday. I said, hey, Cam, you can invite, you know, 10 to 12 people and go to, like, a, you know, like, a rock climbing place or, like, you know, kind of a, they're called, like, Urban Air, Ninja City, like, these different indoor places and do your birthday. And my wife was like, or you can invite, you know, whoever you want and we'll, like, just do it at, like, some public park. Of course, he's like, yeah, not only do I want to, like, do it at a public park, I want to invite my entire class and, like, half the neighborhood. So we had 37 kids birthday party, which, like, is just we're weird parents just for doing that. I feel like people are already staring at us weird because we had that many kids there. So Cam wanted not only to have it at the park,
he wanted to have golf holes set up, like to where we literally like golf into holes, like hit balls into, you know, golf holes there. I'm like, Cam, it was a public park. We can't do it. So we made these little, like, obviously we didn't dig any holes there, but we made these little golf holes. And my wife brought like four sets of clubs. Now, I guess I didn't factor in that, like, I mean, Cam is eight and he does love golf, but like most kids, like, don't really play golf or haven't played golf at age eight. So we had like 35 kids grabbing clubs within like this little small patch of grass, like trying to like swing, like they're not even swinging it like a golf club, they're swinging it like a baseball bat. Like there was like parents, like all the parents that were just there at the birthday are like treading lightly, like coming over, like, oh, move out of the way. Like, move out of the way. Like you just see like all these kids, like, I'm like, oh my God, we got a lawsuit coming up on our hands. Like I was like the asshole after like 2 minutes. I had like come around and like collect all the golf clubs. It was the most chaotic scene of all time. And I told my wife, I was like, God, we are like so those parents now, like when they have like the PTA meetings, like all the parents are like, did you go to that Sennar kid's birthday? Like, are the parents just out of their minds, like handing these kids golf clubs? Like, and they were swinging at it. Like, it was, I mean, the birthday went off fine, but the little 5 minute stretch where kids were almost concussing each other was a flat out disaster.
It's an Aaron Judge. What was Kim thinking?
Just put all the blame on your wife. I, you know what? She's a mother. She wants her kid to, you know, not spoil him, but obviously wants him to be happy. But I think we bit off more than we can chew there.
All right. Cards at, or not at, hosting South Florida Saturday noon, regional sports networks. Cards are 14.5-point favorites, which I think surprises a lot of people, considering USF damn near beat Florida last week. Bulls are 1-2, got blown out by BYU, beat Howard, and then lost last week by a field goal to Florida. Dan, what's your prediction here? How confident are you feeling that this Louisville team is going to get to 2-2?
I'm not confident. I'll say that. I think we win, but I am scared. Like, you know, I just don't think this team is good enough to just be like, oh, this is a win. Like, we could definitely lose, but I'm going to go 35-21 cards, but we pull away late, and it's closer during the game.
I feel like this program now at this point, I feel like is out to just produce maximum anger from the fan base. And you'd think that maximum anger would be losing this game, but no. Maximum anger is like just lighting these guys up, because if Malik Cunningham has a big-time game, which I'm predicting he does, I'm predicting this is a big Malik game, we win handily, we're up big, we kind of coast to, I'm going to say 42-20 victory. Yeah, I may take that up, 45-20 victory. And the fan base on Monday, it's not going to be celebrating, it's not going to be like, I'm back in. It's going to be like, well, of course they can beat down South Florida. Let's see them do it against anybody. Like that's this Satterfield era lives to just piss off the fans in certain ways. And a win, a comfortable win where Malik looks good and the offense looks good is the perfect way to do that, because nobody's going to buy back in. People may have a little bit more hope for the BC and Virginia games, but everybody at this point is just going to be waiting to be let down again, because that's where we are mentally. We've been mind fucked for the last 3 years and it's still going on. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be a good game for U of L and nobody's going to really celebrate it because we're all still pissed off about the first 3 weeks. That's my prediction.
I hope you're right, even though, like you said, it probably won't be satisfying, but we need to get some momentum going here.
All right. Reminder again, always subscribe to the podcast wherever you can find podcasts. It's the best way to learn when new episodes are out. Also, give us a rating if you can. We appreciate that. And leave us a review if you can. We've got two new reviews this week. We always read them on air to try to push you into leaving us reviews. Blocky says, thanks for vibing and keeping it tight. If you need anything, hit me on my mobile. Nice old school, like AIM away message review. I enjoy that. George says, I love the chemistry. I'm answering the call for reviews here. I'm a Marylander who lived in Louisville in 2016, became a Cards fan and the biggest fan of Lamar. My hometown Ravens drafting Lamar has been one of my greatest thrills as a sports fan. The best compliment I can give is that you are both entertaining and people that anyone would be lucky to have as a friend. Well, that's very nice. Thank you, George.
That was a nice comment.
All right. So hopefully this will work. I mean, if we spend 2 hours doing this again for nothing, I'm going to be very upset. Hopefully this works and you're listening to it and the audio quality is at least a little bit better than it has been in the past. If not, don't blame us. Blame Riverside. We will see you guys at some point next week, hopefully reacting to a win and getting you ready for the Cardinal weekend ahead. Go Cards. Beat USF.
Come on, roller coaster, Scott. Let's do this, baby. Go Cards.